Welcome to Attorneys Are Human 2, Episode 16, Negotiate Anything, featuring Kwame Christian Esquire. I'm your host, Steve Wallace. We're joined by our co-host, Selena Music. We're both of the Wallace Law Group. Let's get right to it. We have a great privilege today. We have Kwame Christian Esquire of the American Negotiation Institute.
Hi, Kwame. Thanks for having me. Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, we're going to jump right into it. Kwame, could you tell us a little bit about your background and what led you to becoming an attorney?
Yeah, so I'm a lawyer by trade, but my true passion is in psychology. That's my undergrad degree. I wanted to be a therapist for the longest time. And so I said, okay, yeah, I want to become a therapist to help people. That's what I'm going to do. Then I started to pay more attention to politics. And I said, well, if I get into politics, then I could help more people. That would be more efficient. So I made that pivot. And after getting my psychology degree with a minor in Spanish and foundations of law, I said, all right, let's do a dual degree in law and a master of public policy. Now, as I started to learn more about politics, I started to realize that's not what I want in my life.
Because they all need a psychologist.
Exactly.
Right. Politics is a favorite topic on our podcast, so we may throw a couple political questions your way as well.
I love it. Let's do it. Yeah, so thankfully I got out of that, but I discovered negotiation along the way. We had negotiation competitions. I did well in those, and so I was just trying to figure out how to incorporate this in what I do, and I realize that I like teaching negotiation more than doing it. I love doing it now, but as a recovering people pleaser, I like helping to encourage people and empower them so they could overcome it. And our motto here at the American Negotiation Institute is that the best things in life are on the other side of difficult conversations. And so if we can help people to overcome their fears in these conversations and lean into these difficult conversations, then we're helping them to live their best life.
Excellent.
That's great. That's great. So what type of, see, when I think of a negotiator, for some reason, I only think hostage negotiator. I feel like that's the person you call to prevent someone from jumping off a roof.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have that. And we've had hostage negotiators on the show. It's fun. So the Negotiate Anything podcast, top-ranked negotiation podcast in the world, we have a ton of different guests on. Hopefully you two can join us as well as guests.
We would love the opportunity. We love to hear ourselves talk.
I can because I think I'm constantly talking people off the ledge. Because we do bankruptcy, I feel like I spend a lot of time providing a therapy session and trying to convince the client not to jump, we got a solution.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's the thing. So the way that I define negotiation is any conversation where somebody in the conversation wants something. And when you think about it that way, we're negotiating all the time. And especially in law, we have to recognize that the people with whom we're going to negotiate with the most are the people closest to us, the people on our team. What's the strategy? Who's going to do what? Our clients, negotiating expectations, managing those expectations. Hey, don't do that. Don't do that. We have those conversations with our clients all the time. Please don't do this. You're making my
We're
job
always
worse.
Always trying to rein our clients in. That's one thing. Our clients are their own worst enemies most of the time. And I always tell our clients that if you listen to us on the front end, then we can save you a lot of stress and aggravation on the back end, which when I'm referring to back end, I'm talking about litigation.
Absolutely. That's the thing. And here's the thing. When we're going through law school, we're getting our legal training, we're taught to find the right answer. Let's do our research. This is the right answer. But we're not taught that that's not really how to persuade people. Being right isn't enough when it comes to getting people to actually change their minds, change their behavior. So negotiation provides us with another tool.
Yeah, we always find that especially at times we do handle some litigation. And first of all, opposing counsel oftentimes needs some intense mental health therapy. And two, I hear that all the time, Kwame, is that a lot of our opposing counsel just want to bang us over the head and say, we're right. We're right. You're wrong. Settle this case or dismiss your claim or take zero. And so I'd love to hear some of your strategies to deal with those types of difficult opposing counsel.
Yeah, it's tough. And here's the thing. Let me bring it back a little bit too, because I think about negotiation like a dance. So if you're a good dancer and you're dancing with another good dancer, then the dance is going to look beautiful. This is great. It's nice. Everybody's having fun. If you're a good dancer and you're with somebody who can't dance, the quality of the dance is going to go down. And so I want people to recognize that there's no magical negotiation technique that helps you break through somebody who's acting completely ridiculous. You can make it better. You can certainly make it better, but you can't cure it. And I think people go in thinking that there are some magical techniques you could use to just make these problems go away, but they're not. Those don't exist. You can just make the situation a little bit better. So I want to throw that out there to start. And I think what we have to do is recognize, if we go back to the classic negotiation book of Getting to Yes, Roger Fisher, William Urey.
Yeah, we read that. That was our first week of law school.
Oh, nice.
Our law professor assigned that to us.
Oh, fantastic book. So yep. Think about the difference between positions versus interests. Positions are what you're asking for, but interests, that's why you want it. So I take these threats, these aggressive requests, as opportunities to gather information, because they're coming at you with a really aggressive position. And then if you think about it in terms of their position versus your position, it seems like a zero-sum type of thing. This is ridiculous. We're going straight to litigation because that's untenable, unrealistic, and I won't accept that. And so we keep going back and forth, and we don't go anywhere. Instead, what I would say is, well, I really appreciate you sharing that. It makes sense that you want this. Help me to understand why that's so important to you and your client. What can we do to start moving things forward? And so instead of focusing on specifically what it is that they're asking for, try to find the need behind it, because that's how we can create creative opportunities, right? That's how we can come up with some deals that are a little bit more flexible, that still meet people's needs, but put us in a better position to actually resolve the case.
Excellent.
How does that translate to... Actually, it translates perfect into what's going on in today's society right now. I feel like more people need to learn negotiating skills to discuss their differences with what's going on. For example, or at least what I see what's going on between the police department and civilians and all these organizations that are protesting. Do you ever speak in those situations or scenarios and try to help people mediate or?
Yeah, I'm getting more of those opportunities, which is exciting. It's different city governments reaching out on the brink of closing a couple, fingers crossed. I guess that's up to my negotiation skills, right?
Exactly.
See if I can finish that up. But I'm a mediator as well. And so I think it's important to have that third party neutral to lead the dialogue. Because if the government says, okay, this is our representative who's going to mediate the situation, everybody says, that's not an unbiased party. Who is this person? They're on your side. And the same claim could be made if we have somebody who's a community leader. They're not on the police side. They're not on the side of the politicians. They're with the community. That's not even fair either. So if you bring somebody from outside of the community who has mediation skills and facilitation skills, you actually put yourself in a position where you can have some productive dialogue. Because let's go back to the difference between positions versus interests. If you're protesting, you're making very strong requests. And then if you are the person on the other side, the whatever governmental institutions, you're just saying no to all of that, no. So these are two positions that are really untenable, but there are interests behind all of those positions. Now it's really tough for the people who are there protesting to say, actually behind my aggressive request, I do have something more reasonable. That's my chant. That doesn't really work well with a chant. No. That doesn't chant very well.
Emotions are high too. There's a lot of emotion involved also.
Exactly.
So I feel like you always need someone that's not emotional in those situations.
Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, because we have to get past
the first chant. That's the goal.
One more chant.
I promised you you'd laugh, and hopefully we're going to have a couple more laughs throughout this episode.
I like it. I like it. But I think it's something that communities really need to look into, because the process that I would suggest is you get the different groups together independently. You do a facilitation, figure out what it is that their main concerns are. Because as a third party, they're a lot more vulnerable. They're more open. You're not as much of a threat. I can be honest with you. Great. So I'm going to say these are the things that I want. All right. Then you do that with each of the stakeholders. And then you say, great. Now I have an understanding of what people want. Let's bring representatives together in a private meeting. Now we can have a mediation together and figure out how we can reconcile those differences. And you're doing it behind closed doors, because if you do it publicly, then you feel the need to have this performative nature. I'm showboating for my team. I can't look weak to them. No, I'm going to ramp it up a notch because they're watching me. So you want to make sure that it's a private type of situation. I think those are particularly fun just because they're so challenging, but I think it's necessary for these communities to really get the dialogue moving.
So how do communities get someone like you involved? Because
yes,
I watch the news from a different view because of what we do. And I always tend to be able to see a little bit more. I feel like there's just, like I said, a lot of emotion on both sides, even though one side is saying, no, we're not emotional, we're just upholding the law. And another side is saying, this is unjust. But how does someone get someone like you involved? Is there a hotline?
You're a level-headed, calm, solution-oriented based person. And in politics these days, there's nobody that can bridge the gap like you could.
Yeah. What steps does a community take to get someone like you involved? Like, how do they go about it?
Hopefully what they do is they're proactive. They say, I see there's a problem. Before it gets too bad, I'm going to bring somebody in. That's the way we do it. Think about what you said about your clients before. If you listen to me beforehand, things don't get as bad down the road. It's just like that. But people try to solve their own problems and now it gets significantly worse. And so I think the first thing is call somebody like me early, whoever it is, call the person early so we can start creating a strategy, because you're going to try to start doing things on your own. And then we realize 2 months down the road, whoa, those were a set of bad ideas. And now the situation is worse. So I think just reach out and call it and start it early. Then we strategize and execute within a timely time frame. I think that's really important.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's something that just never even crossed my mind. Maybe we should get a negotiator involved. And then I think to myself, where do I find a negotiator? I think you should start negotiators.com.
Yeah, I tried. It's taken.
Taken already. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Darn cyber stalkers. Okay, so I have a question, because one of the things we get involved is occasionally if a deal falls apart, our clients will engage us to file a lawsuit. My strengths when clients hire me is getting to a solution, getting to a settlement. So I'm involved a lot in many mediations, and down the road, when I get older, I may want to aspire to be a mediator like yourself as well in Florida, just because I enjoy the mediation. So what tips would you give litigants to really maximize the use of a mediator in a case?
I would say first, work with the person on the other side to get somebody that both of you trust. There's a concept called reactive devaluation. And so that's a nerdy psychological way of saying it's essentially a bias. I call it the just because you said it, I don't believe it bias. And so if there's a level of distrust at the beginning, then it's really hard to recover. So I think that's the first step. And then after that, trust the process and get your clients to buy into the process. Because a lot of clients, they look at TV, they say, okay, we're going to war and I want you to be my bulldog. And that's problematic because that's not the best way to solve these challenges. And so I think what's really important is to have that important negotiation with your clients to change their expectations about the process so they can get bought in. And if the client is bought in, it's easier for then you to follow the process and trust the mediator. I think that's really it. As a mediator, some of the things that are very challenging to deal with, the most challenging to deal with really is dealing with people who are not giving it a good faith effort. You can tell. You can tell when somebody's not into it. And it's really hard to get a deal if you can tell if somebody's really not bought into the process.
I'll give you a nugget of wisdom to share. Whenever we have a client that comes to us looking for an attorney and they say they want justice, we definitely will not take that client on, because the legal system in the United States is not set up to accomplish justice, especially on the civil side.
Yes, I especially with people that I've worked with as a mediator who are unrepresented, it's the principle, it's justice and those type of things. I'm like, you're in the wrong place. You might need to talk to Batman or something.
It's funny because I actually told Steven that, and I said, Steven, I just have certain rules. When a client comes to me and they say it's the principle of the matter, That means that they're not going to let this go no matter what, but they're also not going to want to pay.
That's the part of the practice of law that you don't learn in law school.
Yeah.
Yes. When I'm mentoring new lawyers, I always run them through some scenarios. Hey, I'm a client and I don't have any money, but I will pay you. I promise I'm going to pay you. Can you start working? No. The answer is never just no. You can refer them to maybe legal aid or something like that, but you're doing this for a business, right? You come on now. Right. And the thing is, that's something you learn. It's trial by fire. You have to learn it the hard way.
Right. I have a soft heart, and Selena will know that if I ever say we have a new rule in the office. If I ever say I feel bad for the client and I want to help them, that's not a client to take on because they're not going to pay and they're going to take advantage of my.
Yeah. Steven usually tells me, oh, I feel bad. Let's just help them. And I'm usually like, no, we're not doing that. No.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. Here's the thing. You need to know who you are. And I think about my dad. He had a doctor's office and he was the same way. And so I recognize I'm very similar. And I just make it very clear when we're onboarding clients, I don't talk to them until they sign the agreement and we have money. Catherine, our chief operating officer, she handles all of that, all of the business side. I just show up once it's handled because I know who I am. And I'm not trying to get any better.
Here's my rule number two is don't take a client who says, I've gone to several attorneys and none of them knew what they were doing and they didn't help my case. They made it worse. When they say that, I'm just like, no, can't take you.
Yeah, I take it a step further. I'll generally not take a case if they have another attorney, because number one, you're dealing with a mess of an attorney that may have done a great job, but more likely than not, probably didn't do a good job and certainly wasn't good at managing the expectations of the client. And certainly the client is going to use that biased against you.
Yeah, absolutely. But see, I have a different outlook on that. I think for me, it's more when they say that, I think to myself, okay, we're in Florida. You possibly could have had one really bad attorney. However, when I see there's more than one and it's a pattern, I say to myself, okay, your expectations are unmanageable because I'm sure those other attorneys did try and you're just completely unmanageable.
And it's so funny because that rule, I've talked to other professionals, other industries, they say, yeah, that's our same rule too, especially in therapy. Yeah, the other therapists, they didn't get me, but you're special. Oh, don't fall for that. Don't fall for that.
The other challenge that we also encounter many times is managing expectations in this business. So certainly from a negotiation standpoint, and for me personally, because candidly, I'm not the most social person in the world, and that's why I love all of these virtual medium that's available to us. That for me is the biggest challenge in the practice of law, is managing expectations. And the last part of it is really telling the client something they don't want to hear. That for me is the most difficult standpoint, because similar to you, I do enjoy pleasing people.
Mm-hmm. It's tough. And I tell you, when you think about it, this is managing expectations. Probably it's going to be one of the most important things for us to learn how to do in general as human beings, because the single thing that leads to the breakdown of all relationships is the violation of expectations. Most people say it's communication, but think about what a communication breakdown means. It means I thought you were going to communicate with me in this way, but you actually communicated with me in that way. And the gap between our hope, our expectations, and reality is the amount of frustration, anger, disappointment we're going to feel. And so we have to manage those expectations. And what makes it so tough is that oftentimes people don't verbalize those expectations. And so a major part of the negotiation is to get them and persuade them to share those untold expectations, which could be tough. And most people say a problem hasn't occurred, so why would I bring it up? Maybe I create a problem. If you create a problem, good. Let's have the problem now, because then if we handle the conflict now, then we can actually deal with the situation before we go further down the line. But if we don't address a potential problem now, then it becomes a big problem down the road. So we want to be proactive with the way that we negotiate and pull out those expectations so we can negotiate them and resolve those conflicts before they become a problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I tend to ask just a lot of questions, sometimes unrelated, but it's because of that, because I know people don't, they don't tell you everything up front. And I feel like by asking certain questions is how I get more and more information on where they think this case or the situation is go. And I learned early on, so I worked at Apple when I was a lot younger, mm-hmm. as a teenager. And this is when Apple first opened. And I had this manager, his name was Khalil Smith. And he told me, you need to learn to surprise and delight. And I remember looking at him, and you're dealing with technology at Apple, and technology, it's not 100%, it's flawed. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, don't tell someone you can fix something. He says, tell them you're going to take a look at it, downplay it. But once you get it done and you tell them, they're extremely happy. It's like you did magic. So I kept that motto. Even when we do bankruptcy cases, I tell people like the worst case scenario, everything that can go wrong in their case. And then when we finish the case and they're like in shock. They're like, it's over. It's done. It's good. It's and they're constantly calling the office like, so it's really okay. And I'm like, you're fine. It's fine. You're good.
We promise little and deliver a lot. We always try to exceed expectations.
So happy. And I find that those are the clients that I tell Steven, they send us more clients, or they come back and buy a house with us, or they just call us to let us know, hey, my life is totally different because of that bankruptcy that you did. I have my credit back and I've moved on.
Yeah, no, that's great. It makes a lot of sense. And you're spot on. And the thing is, that also builds trust. One of the best ways to build trust is to use what's called statements against interest. So if you say something that people know isn't in your best interest to say, then people trust you a lot more.
That's a term of art and evidence.
Ah, yeah.
That's an exception to the hearsay rule. So
that's, I forgot about that. I forgot about that. That's true. Oh,
okay. I got an A in law school evidence. Hooray for me.
See, I haven't thought about evidence since law school, so that's the difference. Yeah. But yeah, so if you're saying, yeah, these are the worst things going to happen, listen, this isn't easy to say, but this is going to be a really tough case because of X, Y, Z, where we have this uphill battle, but we're going to try our best. And then you pull the rabbit out of the hat. They say, oh my gosh, this was amazing. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And you build trust in the process too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's transition a little bit. I see in your background, you have a diploma or two from The Ohio State University.
Yes.
And so
I'm glad you pronounced it. Thank you.
Yes.
Brother. I appreciate
it. I have some friends that went there. So my question is, and for those of you that aren't aware in the news, the Big Ten announced that they aren't going to be playing football. What are your thoughts about that? And if they were to play football, what protocols in place do you think they should have to protect the players?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So emotionally, this hurts. It's a religion out here, really. Buckeye football is a religion. So this hurts. It's devastating. Now, hypothetically, if we were able to do this, how would we do it? I say we make a bubble. Bubbles are everywhere right now. We have one.
NBA did it right.
They did it right. And think about the UFC. Yeah. UFC was first back in May. They haven't had one issue. They test all the time. And if anybody fails a test, they're just out. And so they have really strict protocols, and they've been at it for months. And so we're building these models, and we still are pretending that these students are actually students. They're semi-pro athletes. And I remember Cardale Jones, one of our quarterbacks a while back, said, I didn't come here to play school. I came here to play football. I don't think many of them are going to be too frustrated about the fact that you're going to be frustrated that you have you don't have that campus social life. But when you think about what's most important to them, for most of them, it's trying to get to the league. At OSU, that's what it is. And so if you can put them in a situation where they're isolated and all of the teams are in the same spot, and then they just engage in virtual learning, I think it could be done, especially if you abbreviate the season. But I don't have any pull. That would be my dream, though. My dream would be for COVID to be gone, though. That's actually my dream.
That's our dream, too.
That's our dream.
That's a better dream.
Although we like connecting through people through Zoom. That we enjoy.
Yeah.
And especially going to hearings. I think all motion calendar hearings, and you've heard me say this a lot, Selena, all motion calendar non-evidentiary matters should be disposed of on Zoom. There's no reason to drive to the courthouse.
Makes sense. I think a lot of processes have been exposed because a lot of these things, we're finally at a point where we are forced to do it another way. And we say, this is better. And then it makes you also realize that a lot of things that are just remnants of the past, why are we even doing this at all? So hopefully we learn from this and we don't arbitrarily shift back if it doesn't provide any type of advantage.
So here's another negotiation sales type of question for you. To quote one of my favorite sales movies of all time, Glengarry Glen Ross, is coffee for closers and why or why not?
Yeah, coffee can be for closers, but I'm not a coffee drinker, so you better entice me with something better. So if you say, hey, Kwame, you don't get any coffee today, I'm like, well, good. Now, if you look at my TED Talk, I talk about how much I love Cinnamon Toast Crunch. So Cinnamon Toast Crunch is for closers. I can get down with that one.
Excellent.
I just had that for breakfast.
See, it's delicious. It's perfect.
So how does this translate into... I don't know if you're married, but your marriage or dating life, because it's kind of, you have an unfair advantage there. You're a negotiator.
I need some advice with the ladies myself. I've never done too well in my life with them. So
yeah. So you're negotiating with the people around you the most often. So my wife, Whitney, my son, Kai, constantly negotiating with them. And I realized that my relationship got better when I started thinking more strategically about how I interact, just being a little bit more intentional. Because before I would say, I'm just trying to communicate, and then she wouldn't get it. And then I would say, how do you not get me? Of all the people in the world, how do you not get me? And then I get frustrated. And then I stopped as I was writing my book, and I said, Kwame, the advice you're giving everybody is to look at negotiation like a life philosophy. Every single interaction is a negotiation. Are you negotiating at home, or are you just reacting a crazy person? I said, okay, yeah, let me be a little bit more intentional, and things are a lot better. And I think what one of the things that was really helpful was a piece of advice from my dad. And he said, Kwame, you have to ask yourself from time to time, is this the hill you want to die on? And he said that when I was like in sixth grade, and I didn't get it. I get it now.
You mentioned your book. Could you tell us a little bit about what led you to writing your book and what it's about? And then most importantly, how can all of our listeners and ourselves purchase it?
Yeah, thank you for that. The book is called Finding Confidence in Conflict. It has the same name as the TED Talk. And so I did the TED Talk, really enjoyed the process, but it was tough because I had a lot of ideas that didn't get to make it to the actual TED Talk. So the notes that didn't make it and the things that I wasn't able to put into the TED Talk, that's what the foundation of the book was built upon. And it was really built on giving people a single tool, the Compassionate Curiosity Framework, for addressing all difficult conversations. So acknowledging and validating emotions, getting curious with compassion, and then joint problem solving. Three steps for every difficult conversation. Makes life a lot easier. And then the first half of the book, though, is just based on the confidence part. Going back to my roots in psychology, helping us to overcome the fears, the different psychological and emotional barriers that we have when it comes to being our best selves in difficult conversations. So that's a little bit about the book.
And how do we get it?
Yes,
it
Amazon.
Sounds great, and I'd love to buy it.
Is it on Audibles? Where can we get it? Where can we download it?
I need to get it on Audible. That is one of the projects for this year. But right now, it's paperback on Amazon.
Excellent.
That's okay. And then I can appreciate a paperback.
Yeah, I like paperback better because we're on our screens all the time. So I kind of like to go a little bit old school and read a book because I can touch it. I can hold it. I can feel it. So I like that. Yeah, and I can keep it. And I like that you kept it old school. So one other thing that perked my interest is you mentioned that you did a TED Talk. How does one get selected to do a TED Talk? That's very exciting.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so the cool thing is the TEDx Talks, those are the smaller versions. So you have the big TED conference in California, then you have community versions. And they can be pretty big. Ohio State has one. The one I did in Dayton, it was 1,200 people. So these are still large events. And you can, depending on the way that they run it, many of them have applications. Other ones are invite only. And so I said in 2017, I said, all right, my goal is to get a TED Talk. I'm just going to apply until I get one.
That's my goal too. I think Celine and I, you've given us inspiration.
Yes,
we found our confidence.
There you go. Hey. Yeah. So just figure out which one you want to do. Here's something though. Recognize that not all TED Talks are created equally. And so the team is going to be important. So look at the previous TED Talks that have come out of those communities and see the quality, because some of them are not great and you want to avoid those. You want to make sure to one with a high level of production quality. Dayton was fantastic. It's a military city. And so they operated theirs with military precision. They weren't leaving anything to chance. They were very focused and it made me a lot better. My process was we started working together. I had to audition and actually so they could actually see it. Then I was accepted in June and then they put me through training through October. And then I had another friend who went through it. They said, yeah, my friend said I should do it. And then I showed up. How was that possible?
How can we find your TED Talk? Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. So same name as the book, Finding Confidence in Conflict.
Very exciting.
Fantastic.
We're going to ask you two more pop culture based questions because we enjoy our time with you. You're not even billing us, so we're excited.
I know, right?
But we're promoting all your wares. So Selena, what would you like to ask Kwame?
There's so many things.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to know. Oh, I asked this the other day just because I'm curious on what everyone's, I want to know what your celebrity crush was when you were a teenager.
Oh my God.
And what was your favorite musical group when you were a teenager? What were you listening to?
Okay, yeah. I got it. So Ciara was my crush growing up. And what was funny is one of my friends is actually cousins with the quarterback from the Seahawks, Russell Wilson. And so when my friend got married, Ciara and Russell Wilson were at the wedding. So ooh. I could say I shared a dance floor. She didn't know who I was or that I was there. But I can
see. In your head, you were singing My Goodies.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Exactly. I was there. So that was great. And so favorite artist growing up, I'm an island boy. So my family's from Dominica and Guyana. So I love music from those countries. But I'm not going to go too obscure with some Dominican artists because they're too small. But the Mighty Sparrow from Trinidad and, of course, Bob Marley from Jamaica. Those are.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Very interesting. Okay. Very cool. Very cool. See, that kind of tells me your age range and it tells me a lot more than you think.
There is
a lot. It tells me what you're into and it tells me how strict your family was.
Yep. Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Yes.
So my question for you, Kwame, is what shows or shows have you been binge watching during the pandemic?
Oh, Superstore. That's funny. It's a hilarious show. So disappointed when we got through it. So disappointed, but it's so funny. So that was the one that we wiped out. Gosh, it's always so disappointing when you get through a show that you binge watch. And then of course, I like Rick and Morty. That's one of my guilty pleasures too.
That's a funny show too.
I watch Rick and Morty. I've never watched Superstore, but I want to. What's your top movie that you've watched? What movie has been like the best movie you think you've watched or even rewatched?
I'm not big into movies, but I did watch this movie a couple weeks ago that came out on Netflix, a Netflix original, where I forget what it's called, but the people, they were like immortal. I forget the name of it. It was actually really good. It was actually really good because usually I'm not into this kind of sci-fi type of things. I like to see either comedies or things blowing up, but that was good. Actually, it was sci-fi and things blew up.
Okay. Yeah. My last pop culture question before we go to the lightning round, and this is a very popular question, a topic of conversation on our podcast, and it relates to who is the basketball GOAT, LeBron James or Michael Jordan, and why?
Good timing. I just started watching The Last Dance and I feel like the answer's gotta be Michael Jordan because I grew up with LeBron. I'm like, who could be better than this? Yeah, I get it now. I get it. And the thing is, also, you have to consider the thing that I hit me last night. He was putting up points, like 61 points in a time where the rules were really lax. They were out there playing rugby sometimes. And so the rules are super soft. So you have fun games now where people can just play essentially unimpeded basketball. But back when Michael was playing, they're tackling folks, and anytime they get close to the rim, you think about the Pistons. So it's I'm seeing it now, and so I appreciate it a lot more. Unless the thing is, LeBron still has time. Who knows what happens next? But a lot would have to happen.
True. Okay, Selena, take us home with the lightning round.
All right. I have the lightning round now. Okay. So since I more or less know your age range now, it changes everything. Okay. So Batman or Superman?
What's the question? Who am I, or who am I picking in a fight?
No. Who do you prefer? So these are going to be, it's a series of questions, and it's this or that, and you just pick the most appealing or the person that comes to mind or your favorite or who you think is the best.
Yeah, certainly Batman.
Batman. Okay. Doesn't matter that Superman's an alien.
Yeah, it's not even fair. Like the fact for me, I have a 4-year-old, okay?
What about Ben Affleck was Batman? That kind of turns me off a little bit.
Ben Affleck or Christian Bale?
Oh, Christian Bale.
Okay. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, but here's my thing about Superman, though. Let me say this, because if I'm playing basketball against, like, Kai, my 4-year-old, and who's going to win, Kwame or Kai? It should be me. If I'm ever challenged, that's an indictment of who I am. And so let's bring it back to Superman. If Superman is ever challenged, you're an alien. Who is challenging you? How do you – come on now. We don't even have kryptonite on Earth. We shouldn't. That's an alien thing. So I don't know. I just don't have much respect for him.
True, but Batman did kill Superman unjustly.
You know what we think about justice here on the podcast.
Okay, next question. This is a power couple question. Beyonce and Jay-Z or Kanye and Kim Kardashian? I'm going to get as ridiculous with these.
It has to be Beyonce and Jay-Z. By default, you didn't even name a competition.
Hey, listen. Kanye he thinks he's going to be
president.
We didn't
get the answer. What was the answer? I didn't hear.
It's got to be Beyonce and Jay-Z. Can you ask me a hard question, please?
Okay, here's a hard one. The Jetsons versus the Flintstones.
The Jetsons.
Really?
Yeah. No, first of all, it's historically incorrect. Dinosaurs and humans were never around at the same time. That's how we exist today. And then the Jetsons, at least that's a painting a picture of a hopeful future. Except, though, flying cars, not realistic, because when you look at the physics of a flying car, we have that right now. Those are called helicopters. The amount of air propulsed down in order to get a car up
would be so loud.
Yeah, those are so loud. That's noise pollution. We would not want a society with flying cars. Number one.
Unfortunately, I'm biased because I thought when I was a kid that my life was going to be like the Jetsons.
Yeah.
I love that cartoon. Yeah. I love
it. It was great because it was hopeful. Like, you remember those food tablets? How convenient would that be?
Yeah.
Not real. And do we really want we see drivers today. I've been in Florida. I've seen your drivers. Do we want people with flying cars? Really? That would be the worst thing ever.
It would be pretty scary.
We're going to have autonomous cars, aren't we?
That now I can deal with that. But if we had flying cars, we wouldn't even need, like, bad guys. They'd just be like, hey, let's just sit back, watch everybody else kill themselves.
Okay. Next question is, The Godfather or Scarface?
Scarface.
Really?
Yeah, no, and here's why. I like movies with clean endings. That's what I like. And sometimes I get mad at shows and movies that go on beyond the way that they should. It leaves too much open to criticism. And so Scarface had it was a great told story and a very clean ending. We know what happened to him.
Yeah.
I like how clean the ending was. Now, as far as something to look at and analyze and take things from, definitely The Godfather, because the Mafia, that's an incredible organization. Evil, for sure, but an incredible organization. So
they run it like a business. It's admirable.
Run like a business.
Yeah, it's beautiful, actually. And that's why I like American Gangster, because Frank Lucas was able
That's a great movie.
Oh, that's one of my favorites. That's one of my favorite movies. I watched that multiple times because he's able to learn from the Italians and figure out their organization structure and then do it better in that community. And just business fundamentals, getting a better product at a lower price and selling it.
He ran it like any other business you would run. Unfortunately, they got a little too flashy. Mm-hmm. You know, the fur coats, the hats don't help.
Fur coat. Can't do it.
don't help. I always watch those movies and I think to myself, I think I would make a great mobster, but probably not a good
idea. But you follow the law too much, so I don't think you would be a mobster. So
yeah, I don't like getting traffic tickets. Right. I freak out. Oh, okay. And last one, because I asked this yesterday and I'm always wondering, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, or Vin Diesel?
These questions are preposterous. This is an insult to my intellect and my taste. Of course it's The Rock. What is this? Come on.
Someone yesterday said Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
You need to check the quality of your guests, please. That's insane. What? Maybe because he can drive better? Maybe.
But can he? It's a movie.
That's a good question. Yeah, gosh.
Thank you so much, Kwame. This was a great episode, and hopefully you'll accept our invitation to come back because we have so many questions for you that have not been answered yet.
Yes, so it'll be fun.
Let us know how to find you online, and then also tell us again how to get that great book of yours, and then how would one be part of your negotiation, your American Negotiation Institute?
Ah, thank you. Yes. So if you
give us all the social media scoop.
Yes, Instagram and LinkedIn. Instagram is Kwame Negotiates. And then LinkedIn, everybody who reaches out to me on LinkedIn gets a personal message. I don't know when you'll get it, but it will happen eventually. It's getting harder to keep that promise. But of course, check out the podcast, Negotiate Anything. We have different guests every week. And then the book is on Amazon. It's called Finding Confidence in Conflict, same name as the TED Talk. And then, also free gift for your audience. If you go to AmericanNegotiationInstitute.com/guide, you can get free access to over 15 negotiation guides, salary negotiation, business negotiation, car negotiation, how to negotiate as an introvert, 15 plus, how to have difficult conversations about race, all sorts of different guides that'll walk
you
through.
Any American Negotiation Institute swag? Because I'd love, you got a nice shirt on right there.
I know. Well, I'm thinking about selling some merch. But I think it might be a distraction, so I'll just wear it myself and have people envy me.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And we look forward to you coming on the show again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Attorneys Are Human Too. Please subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast host. Please also leave us a 5-star review with your podcast provider. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we look forward to seeing you next time.